Forever Dog.
Welcome to Forever Dog. You can listen to this podcast ad-free on Forever Dog Plus by signing up at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. And make sure to follow us on social at Forever Dog Team and check out all of our podcasts at foreverdogpodcasts.com. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show. Hey, how you doing, Forever Dog listeners? My name is Don Finelli, and I host a podcast that just joined the network. It's called The Need to Fail, and I interview writers, actors, and other creatives about a time in their career where they just wanted to throw in the towel and say, you know what, enough is enough, it's never going to work out. But more importantly, we talk about the tools they use to push past their setbacks. My past guests include Abby Jacobson, Lauren Lapkus, John Gabris, Nicole Byer, Jessica Sinclair, and the king of losing well, Chris Gethard. I got over 50 of these bad boys just waiting to be heard, so check it out. You can find The Need to Fail on the Forever Dog Podcast Network, Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts nowadays. Let's fail together now so we can succeed tomorrow.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater with Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, and guest Edgar Montplaisir. Reading The Woman Who Tried to Be Good by Edna Ferber.
Hi, welcome to Public Domain Theater, the podcast of highbrow readings and lowbrow commentary. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Kaytai.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent. And today we are joined by a very special guest. You may know him from UCB, from the Culture Kings podcast, from Craig of the Creek. We have writer, performer, Edgar Montplaisir is here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome so much.
I feel very grateful to be here. I very enjoy being on others' podcast.
Yeah, it's nice to be on someone else's podcast.
Mm-hmm. I feel a lot less pressure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Change it up.
I can't shake the habit, though. So tell me, where are you guys from? what do you guys do?
Born in Reno, raised in San Diego.
And, really?
Born in Long Beach, California.
Oh, wow.
Raised in the suburbs of L.A.
Oh, wow.
Where are you from?
Where are you from?
I'm from New York.
Born oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And then when did
but
you
now
out
you're here?
Here.
I went to college in Northern California.
Oh.
In 2009, and then I just fell in love with California. I never left.
Where did you go to college?
It's a really small school called Pacific Union College. Only 1,000 kids in the school overall.
Wow.
That's undergrad and grad.
Really? So is it like very drama filled because everyone knows everyone?
Absolutely.
Yes. I love that.
What was your major?
I was a film and television major.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
How many people were like in your program?
Oh man, like 20.
Really?
Now, ask me how many of them still do film.
How many?
Me.
You.
Oh, wow.
Do you call all those people every year and say like, hey, I'm still doing film?
I mean, one of them's like my good friend. We still hang out all the time and he's like a festival programmer. He's like, you're the one, man. You got to do it for all of us.
I
don't want to. I just want to make enough money that I can like go to the Indian buffet.
Yes.
And not hurt my bank account.
Yeah.
And I'm doing this for me.
Exactly.
You live your life for you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mine is mine.
Yeah.
That actually segues very nicely into asking, what kind of reader are you? Were you a big reader as a kid? Did you do all the assigned reading growing up?
I was a big reader as a kid. I wanted to be an author. That was like my original dream. So I read books. So like I was big into the Hardy Boys.
Oh my God. Classic all-American roundhouse punches and kicks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That can take out anybody.
Yeah. That's like the teen years though.
Mm-hmm.
You should talk to Alex Ferney about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's very into those Hardy Boys.
I also liked Encyclopedia Brown and Nancy Drew. I liked all those mystery
things. Yeah, detective.
I liked the mystery stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still into mystery stuff now?
No, I don't read books anymore. I only read books. I read the same two books like every now and then, which is And Here's the Kicker and Poking a Dead Frog, which is just two books that are interviews with comedians and writers.
Yeah.
And I just reread them all the time. And I only read articles now, which I think it's bad, right?
Well, this is very common for like all adults.
Yeah.
Now
everyone,
nobody reads, nobody has time. Nobody
and
has
most
time
people
to read
like
anymore.
The stuff that they read too is nonfiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's over fiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of articles on Deadline and Vulture. Mm. And AV Club.
So you're all about the industry.
I love reading
industry
about that.
Stuff.
Anything that's an analysis of something to the point that it kills it really intrigues me.
Yeah. I
love killing the magic.
Me too.
Yeah.
I used to like like watch, this was like when Mad Men was out, like I would watch Mad Men and then I would go on AV Club and like read the like breakdown of it
by Todd Vanderwolf.
And and then I bought book, is it Alan Sepinwall's book about like,
I know that's a name.
Yeah, I remember
he's
like
a big TV critic.
Yeah, I remember like buying his book and like being super, it was about all the best shows that were ever on television, and I was really excited because Buffy the Vampire Slayer was on there. So he talks a little bit about that. But yeah, I remember like, and then when I rewatched Buffy, I went and found the like recaps that they would do on AV Club and to see their analysis. And then I was like, why don't I make something that analyzes?
Yeah, exactly. I feel that 100%. That is the kind of book that I would read now, that book that you just told me about. But I wouldn't read like a novel. Like there was this girl that tried to give me like two novels for my birthday. And I was like, what a waste.
She when she gave them to you, was she like, I need like, you here, to like talk be to me smarter? Or
no, she was just like, I think that you'd really vibe with these. And
and they were fiction, or were
they
like
fiction? Like one was about this guy who like listens to records and they send them back in time. It's like new. There were newer books, and I was like, I'm not going to read this shit. Like,
yeah.
Did you feel like she was right about your vibe, at least?
Yeah, no, that book is very much so me. If it was a movie, I would love
if
that.
There were, if it was a movie or if there was, like, an article about that movie.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You would read that.
I would read it. If it was a miniseries, I would watch the shit out of it.
Read it, make the miniseries.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fair, very fair.
Then it's research, and then it's work, and then you're doing the right thing.
It's worth it.
Okay.
And then you're killing the magic.
You guys have won me over.
Back on books.
Yeah, I'm back in.
Okay, so what do we know about Edna Ferber, who's our author?
Absolutely nothing.
I know absolutely nothing about this person. Well, lucky for us. Brett to the rescue. He's written us a little bio. Okay, so also this story, thank you so much to the listener that suggested this to us from our submission form. If you guys want to get in on that magic, you can go to our Twitter account, at Public Domain Pod, and we have a pinned tweet that's the link to that.
People suggest short stories to you guys, and there's a whole market for short stories that I never knew about.
There you go. It's because you're not reading.
It's true.
It's because you're not reading.
That's, that was a very pointed comment, and I want you to know that it was received.
So cold.
Painful. I did that thing where like I looked at you, and then I like looked away and was like, and that's why you don't read. Yeah. That's something my mother would do.
Yeah, that's something that my mother would do as well. You just didn't have an accent.
Same for my mom. Okay. So Edna. When do we think Edna was born?
I want to say the 50s or 60s.
Okay.
That was going to be my guess too, but now I'm thinking maybe she wrote this in the 50s or 60s. So I'm going to say 1912.
You're both wrong.
Damn.
Wow. 1885.
Okay. 1885.
Yeah. Wow, wow, wow.
All right.
Wow, wow, wow.
This is a white woman?
Maybe. Thanks. I'm going to guess.
There's going to be some problematic views in this short story.
Yes. That's something that happens in every single one of these.
Yeah.
There's always like a part where you start reading a sentence and you're like, oh man, this is going to be bad.
We read a story with Nick Weiger called Love Story, and it was about a future where women rule the world.
Oh no.
And it's terrible. And the happy ending is that we want to give it back to the men.
Oh, wow. They realize that on their own?
Yeah.
Well, that's like they chose still, you know what I'm saying? So that's still a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Happy ending.
Yeah, it's totally happy ending. But there's always shitty like race stuff in all of these. And like, it's always fun to see when it happens. Because it's not so much if.
It's, like, it's definitely
it
a when.
It just happens. Okay. And then you're like, aw.
There it is.
You're going to.
I wonder how much it'll get repeated.
Oh,
that much. We thought. Yeah.
Okay. So Edna, Miss Edna, she is an American novel. Oh, I'm sorry. When do we think she died? She's born in 1885.
Okay.
1922.
Interesting. What do you think?
I'm going to go along with that out of respect. For our guests.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Always defer to the guests.
Yeah.
Okay. 1968.
Okay.
That's a long ass time.
She lived a long time. She lived a long time.
Wow. 80?
Yeah, seems like. Yeah.
Close to 90?
83.
My right. God.
Okay. I'm bad at math.
It's okay. Okay. So she's an American novelist.
Didn't put the work into it.
No, you just didn't think about it.
Yeah.
You just added 10 to my answer.
She's a short story writer, a playwright. Her novels include the Pulitzer Prize winning So Big in 1924.
Never
Showboat
heard of it.
Yeah. In 1926. Showboat. Made into the celebrated 1927 musical.
Oh, my.
Cimarron, 1929.
I've heard of that.
Made into the 1931 film, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture, and Giant. In 1952.
Wow, I wonder if this story is good or not, because we've had a few occasions where it's like somebody who's considered a good writer has had a shit story. Mm. So we'll see.
Yeah,
everybody
we'll see.
Has their blunders, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. And it sucks when your blunders are immortalized on a podcast.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. That's, y'all are doing that to them.
Yeah, we are. She's turning in her grave right now.
Weekly.
Ferber was born in Kalamazoo, Michigan in 1885.
Hey.
Fun.
Nice. She began her career at 17. She was a reporter on the Appleton Daily Crescent in Appleton, Wisconsin. Later at the Milwaukee Journal, she worked so hard she collapsed.
Oh.
While recuperating, she wrote her first short story, The Homely Heroine.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, Edna.
Edna. Edna.
This is a Midwestern woman. Through and through.
Yes, through and through.
She was the like, homely woman. She was the hero.
As she was like, as she was like collapsing, she was like, "Oh my stars!
Oh gee, I'm so sorry. I've done this for everyone.
Oh, I'm just making a big muck
big
of everything.
Fuss.
Oh, go on without me. Edna will get through it." Her most famous recurring character was a traveling petticoat saleswoman called Emma McChesney.
Oh, my God.
Who starred in over 30 stories. She took her inspiration from her mother, a shopkeeper whose business savvy was disconcerting to the conservative Midwestern culture they lived in.
It wasn't so Midwestern and so white.
It wasn't exactly a scandal to see a woman running a store, but it did make everyone uneasy.
This woman was horny. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, she was.
This is sexual frustration being manifested in
a book. Oh, I clicked on a link.
Uh-oh.
It's a Wikipedia link. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. All right. After her first play, Our Mrs. McChesney, starring Emma McChesney, appeared on Broadway in 1915. She moves to New York. She's a member of the Algonquin Roundtable, a group of wits who met for lunch every day at the Algonquin Hotel in New York.
The first Sex in the City.
Yeah. Oh. Men and women. Wow. I feel really bad for not having heard of Edna now.
Ferber and another member of the roundtable, Alexander Wolcott, were longtime enemies. Their antipathy lasting until Wolcott's death in 1943.
Oh my God.
In a review of Ferber's play, Minnick, Wolcott said that it loosed vials of vitriol out of all proportion to the gentle little play's importance. Ferber replied that she found the review just that degree of malignant poisoning that I always find so stimulating in the works of Mr. Wolcott.
Oh. They liked each other.
They probably hate fucked so much.
Yeah. They liked each other.
Yeah.
He's like,
a real Sam and Diane situation.
Yeah. She also.
Cheers.
She's like sparring with everyone.
Thank you for clarifying
that. You know, I just throw out names. People might think there's people
that you know.
I know.
Like our friends, Sam and Diane.
Oh, yeah. Cheers. People on TV are my friends.
Yeah. I'm lonely. She also sparred with the playwright Noel Coward. Once, when Coward happened upon Ferber dressed just like him, he said, "Edna, you almost look like a man." Without missing a beat, Ferber replies, "So do you."
Oh, Edna, nice.
She's kind of badass.
She is a little, yeah.
I want to apologize for my early comments about her.
Well, we'll see.
Well, she's still.
We'll see. We'll see. Her novels kept her busy, as the 20-odd films based on them. She particularly enjoyed Giant, which was made into a film starring Rock Hudson and James Dean. During filming, Dean bought his fatal Porsche and raced the 71-year-old Ferber around in it. That's cool. She kind of reminds me of like Katharine Hepburn.
Again, I feel really bad for not having heard of Edna. She sounds awesome.
Yeah, she sounds very badass.
Yeah.
She died at her home in New York City of stomach cancer at the age of 82.
She died of cancer?
Yeah.
Wow.
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 At 82.
Give the woman a break. She was in her 80s and she accomplished so much. You don't give her cancer.
Rude. Yeah.
Rude. How dare.
How very dare.
You guys ready?
Yes.
The woman who tried to be good. Before she tried to be a good woman, she had been a very bad woman.
Hell yeah.
So bad that she could trail her wonderful apparel up and down Main Street from the Elm Tree Bakery to the railroad tracks without once having a man doff his hat to her or a woman bow.
Was she, like, dressed in her underwear?
Yeah. Was she dropping her clothes?
Like dressed in like a low cut evening gown.
Okay, here's why.
Oh, okay.
You passed her on the street with a surreptitious glance, though she was well worth looking at in her furs and laces and plumes.
Ooh.
She had the only full-length mink coat in our town, and Gans's shoe store sent to Chicago for her shoes. Hers.
Speaking of Sex in the City.
Yeah.
This lady.
Hers were the miraculously small feet you frequently see in stout women. Okay.
All right. Well,
wait, hold on.
Hold on.
What does that mean? Stout woman has small feet.
Duh. You know how,
I'll text my girlfriend.
You know.
Did you know? Question mark.
Stout woman has small feet.
We'll await her confirmation.
Yeah. Right. And we'll wait quietly. Usually she walked alone, but on rare occasions, especially around Christmas time, she might have been seen accompanied by some silent, dull-eyed, stupid-looking girl. Who would follow her dumbly in and out of stores, stopping now and then to admire a cheap comb or a chain set with a flashy imitation stones, or, queerly enough, a doll with yellow hair and blue eyes and very pink cheeks. But alone or in company, her appearance in the stores of our town was the signal for a sudden jump in the cost of living. Oh, interesting. The storekeepers mulked. The storekeepers mulked at her, and she knew it and paid in silence, for she was of the class that has no redress.
Oh, they were like overcharging her because they knew she was good for it.
Yeah.
Mm, she didn't care because she was balling.
Yeah. But she also is like shunned kind of by the town. She was
good for it.
She is good for it.
Yeah, they thought she was a hussy, probably.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, her name. Okay. She owned the house with the closed shutters near the freight depot. Did Blanche Devine.
Oh, hell yeah.
Blanche Devine played the jazz music.
Yeah.
Right Engineer, when that name is said, play the jazz music.
Yeah, come on, Alec.
In a larger town than ours, she would have passed unnoticed. She did not look like a bad woman. Of course, she used too much makeup. And as she passed, you caught the oversweet breath of a certain heavy scent. Then, too, her diamond eardrops would have made any woman's features look hard. But her plump face, in spite of its heaviness, wore an expression of good-humored intelligence.
There's a lot going on here. All right, yeah. So she's got a full face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's got diamond earrings on. Mm-hmm. But as we all know, diamond earrings make your face look hard.
Making your face look hard. That's
right.
Not hers, though.
But get this.
Yes.
Her eyeglasses gave her somehow a look of respectability. We were talking about this
before the podcast.
Them glasses will change your whole outlook in
life.
We do not
associate. And others on you.
We do not associate vice with eyeglasses. So, in a large city, she would have passed for a well-dressed, prosperous, comfortable wife and mother who was in danger of losing her figure from an overabundance of good living. But with us, she was a town character, like old man Givens, the drunkard, or the weak-minded Binns girl.
Well, with a name like Blanche Devine, you gotta be.
You gotta be a character.
Just living up to the name.
Mm-hmm.
When she passed the drugstore corner, there'd be a sniggering amongst the vacant-eyed loafers idling there, and they would leer at each other and jest in undertones. So, knowing Blanche Devine as we did, there was something resembling a riot in one of our most respectable neighborhoods when it was learned that she had given up her interest in the house near the freight depot and was going to settle down in the white cottage on the corner and be good.
What? All good people live in white cottages.
Mm-hmm. 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 On the corner.
No one nice lives near a freight depot.
All the husbands in the block, urged on by righteously indignant wives, dropped in on Alderman Mooney after supper to see if the thing could not be stopped. Oh, they're NIMBYs.
They are.
Yeah.
Not my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What's a NIMBY?
They're not in my backyard, people, and they like get mad when like someone's going to build a condo because they're like, too many people.
That's why they won't let that Target get built.
Yeah.
It's NIMBYs.
Yeah. Okay.
Across from UCB Sunset. Mm-hmm,
that giant ass Target because they don't want to lose the view.
Because it looks so good right now.
Because that view is gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, it's not.
It's stunning. It's such a good view.
The fourth of the protesting husbands to arrive was the. Oh, I like how she does this. She capitalizes the first letter in each of these words. Very young husband who lived next door to the corner cottage that Blanche Devine had bought. The very young husband had a very young wife, and they were the joint owners of Snooky. Snooky was 3 going on 4 and looked something like an angel, only healthier and with grimier hands. The whole neighborhood borrowed her and tried to spoil her, but Snooky would not spoil.
Is it a child or a dog?
Child or a dog?
Child.
It's got to be a dog.
It's got hands.
It's
got
to be a dog.
I thought dog, dirty but hands. Then it has hands.
Dogs have hands.
Oh, right. Dogs have hands.
Dogs have hands.
Yeah.
Alderman Mooney was down in the cellar, fooling with the furnace. He was in his furnace overalls, a short black pipe in his mouth. Three protesting husbands had just left. As the very young husband, following Mrs. Mooney's directions, descended the cellar stairs, Alderman Mooney looked up from his tinkering. He peered through a haze of pipe smoke. "Hello," he called, and waved the haze away with his open palm. Oh, I'm sorry. That was the young husband.
Okay.
"Hello," he called, and waved the haze away with his open palm.
Much different voice. Thank you, Kelly.
"Come on down. Been tinkering with this blamed furnace since supper. She don't draw like she ought. Long towards spring, a furnace always gets..." What? "Oh, long towards spring, a furnace always gets bulky. How many tons you use this winter?" "Oh, 5, said the very young husband shortly. Alderman Mooney considered it thoughtfully. The young husband leaned up against the side of the water tank, his hands in his pockets. "Say, Mooney, is that right?" Wait, who's talking now? Young husband.
I don't know. I zoned out for a second, to be perfectly honest. I was like, furnace, blah, blah, blah.
Isn't an alderman like a position in government?
Yeah, he's like a mayor type guy, mm-hmm. I feel like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's like helping at the house, though.
Like a council person, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
probably.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess he's being helpful?
The first time I heard it was in Chris Rock's movie where he runs for president.
Oh.
He's an alderman in his town.
So I first heard it when I went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of student.
I might have first heard it in one of these
council
stores.
Things. The first time I heard it was now.
I'm like, yeah, it is a position of government power. Oh, say, Mooney, is that right about Blanche Devine's having bought the house on the corner? "You're the fourth man that's been in to ask me this evening. I'm expecting the rest of the block before bedtime. She bought it all right." The young husband flushed and kicked at a piece of coal with the toe of his boot. "Well, it's a darn shame," he began hotly. "Jen was ready to cry at supper. This will be a fine neighborhood for Snooky to grow up in. What's a woman like that to want to come into a respectable street for anyway?"
Everybody's like, "Ugh, that rich woman with the mink coat is trying to move into our neighborhood."
Yeah, I'm confused. Why don't they want her there? She's going to up the value.
Yeah. They should be happy.
She's like a single lady with a lot of money.
That's right.
Who shops a lot. And if you are unmarried in the Midwest, you are not to be trusted.
Yeah.
This is just a fact that, you know, unmarried white women with a lot of income that move into neighborhoods are the first wave of gentrification.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's what they're scared of.
It drives
maybe
up your prices immediately because they have money.
Mm. Because there's no rent control. Too.
Yes.
Like that.
Everybody vote yes on Prop 10 in California on November 6th so that we can start putting some rent control laws
back
on the books.
That's right.
Fuck that.
I own my home and pay my taxes. Alderman Mooney looked up. So does she. She's going to improve the place, he interrupted. Well, paint it and put it in a cellar and a furnace and build a porch and lay a cement walk all around.
Oh, shit.
The young husband took his hands
out
of his pockets.
Market value's going right up.
In order to emphasize his remarks with gestures. Well, what's that got to do with it? I don't care if she puts in diamonds for windows and sets out Italian gardens in a terrace with peacocks on it. You're the alderman of this ward, aren't you? Well, it was up to you to keep her out of this block. You could have fixed it with an injunction or something. I'm going to set up a petition. That's what I'm going...
Alderman, I don't know. You could have fixed it with, like, I don't know, government words. business things.
Taxes.
This is a young man with a young wife.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is the very young man with a very young wife.
And he's wasting his time.
You know what? He's really, like, confused because he really wants to fuck her.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is. He's like, and his wife knows. And so she's, like, projecting on him. And then he's, like, projecting onto her. He's hating the thing he desires.
That's right.
Classic, 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 classic.
Yeah,
classic.
She, you know, look, so far, Eden's a really good writer. I'm getting very Mad Men vibes from this story.
Me too.
I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Eden, I apologize for insulting you.
we're all pro. Fuck, what's her name?
Eden.
What? Edna?
Edna.
Edna.
Edna Ferber.
Edna.
Wow. Edna.
Edgar.
We're so sorry.
Edna.
That's
Edgar,
right.
Edna. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Alderman Mooney closed Lipstick the furnace door with a bang that drowned the rest of the threat. He turned the draft in a pipe overhead and brushed his sooty palms briskly together, like one who had put an end to profitless conversation. She's bought the house, he said mildly, and paid for it. And it's hers. She's got a right to live in this neighborhood as long as she acts respectable. The very young husband laughed. Ha ha ha!
What do they think? She's going to start a freaking whorehouse? What the hell?
Probably.
Oh, maybe she will.
Like, spread, like...
I hope she does.
He's afraid she's going to, like, spread, like, dissent among all the other women.
Okay. A la Stepford Wives.
She won't last. They never do.
They.
Alderman Mooney had taken his pipe out of his mouth and was rubbing his thumb over the smooth bowl, looking down at it with unseeing eyes. On his face
becoming
was a queer...
sexually attracted to it. Get it together, Alderman.
His pants became tighter.
tighter.
On his face was a queer look. The look of one who is embarrassed because he's about to say something honest. Look here. I want to tell you something. I happened to be up in the mayor's office the day Blanche signed for the place. She had to go through a lot of red tape before she got it. Had quite a time of it, she did. Say, kid, that woman ain't so bad. The very young husband exclaimed impatiently. Oh, don't give me any of that, Mooney. Blanche Devine's a town character. Even the kids know what she is. If she's got religion or something and wants to quit and be decent, why doesn't she go to another town? Chicago or someplace where nobody knows her.
People are out of their minds.
I think she's a madame.
Yeah,
I think she is.
She's wearing
the full mink coat. She's got plumes and lace.
She's got some dumb girls coming with her shopping.
Oh, you're totally right. She's a madame.
I have a theory. I think she's black.
Interesting.
And she's based off of that. Is it Madam C.J. Walker? Is that famous madame in San Francisco?
Oh, interesting. She's Would this be around the same time?
Big time black entrepreneur. Yeah. It would be.
Interesting.
I think that's who this woman is based
off of. I wonder if Edna's
of.
Just oh, like Edna, not Edna, specifically Edna. Talking about race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Trying to like really get at people's minds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Edna is shattering all of my expectations.
Yeah. Edna. Oh, okay. Fingers crossed.
She's our favorite now.
Okay. The motion of Alderman Mooney's thumb against the smooth pipe bowl stopped. His erection grew harder. He looked up slowly. That's what I said. The mayor, too. But Blanche Devine said she wanted to try it here. She said this was home to her. Funny, ain't it? Said she wouldn't be fooling anybody here. They know her. And if she moved away, she said it'd leak out some way sooner or later. It does, she said. Always. Seems like she wants to live like, well, like other women. She put it like this. She says she hasn't got religion or any of that. She says she's no different than she was when she was 20. She said that for the last... Yeah.
All that mumbo jumbo.
She said that for the last 10 years, the ambition of her life has been to go into a grocery store and ask the price of, say, celery. And if the clerk charged her 10 when it ought to be 7, to be able to sass him with a regular piece of her mind and then sail out and trade somewhere else until he saw that she didn't have to stand anything from storekeepers any more than any other woman did her own marketing.
That's why she was being overcharged. Not because she's a baller. It's because they don't like her.
Yeah.
They don't want her to shop there. They're trying to price her out of the store.
That's right.
She's a smart woman, Blanche is. God knows I ain't taking her part exactly, but she talked a little, and the mayor and me got a little of her history. A sneer appeared on the face of the very young husband. He had been known before he met Jen as a rather industrious sower of wild oats. He knew a thing or two, did the very young husband, in spite of his youth. He always fussed when Jen wore even a V-necked summer gown on the street.
This fucking very young husband. Oh, she wasn't playing for sympathy, went on Alderman Mooney in answer to the sneer. She said she'd always paid her way and always expected to. Seems her husband left her without a cent when she was 18, with a baby. She worked for $4 a week in a cheap eating house. The two of them couldn't live on that. Then the baby. Good night, said the very young husband. I suppose Mrs. Mooney's going to call? Minnie. It was her scolding all through supper that drove me down to monkey with the furnace. She's wild, Minnie is.
So he's hiding in the furnace room?
So Mr. Mooney was like, I don't even want to talk about this anymore. It is fucking Minnie's fault I'm here.
Yeah.
You got to throw your wife on
that. Yeah. He's like, oh, it's Minnie.
He's like, fucking Minnie, if I wasn't fucking fixing this fucking furnace, your dumbass wouldn't be talking to me about this. He peeled off his overalls and hung them on a nail. The young husband started to ascend the cellar stairs. Alderman Mooney laid a detaining finger on his sleeve. Don't say anything in front of Minnie. She's boiling. Minnie and the kids are going to visit her folks out west this summer, so I wouldn't so much as dare to say good morning to the divine woman. Anyway, a person wouldn't talk to her, I suppose, but I kind of thought I'd tell you about her. Thanks, said the very young husband dryly. In the early spring, before Blanche Devine moved in, there came stonemasons who began to build something. It was a great stone fireplace that rose in massive incongruity at the side of the little white cottage. Oh, she's going to start a restaurant. Blanche Devine was trying to make a home for herself. Blanche Devine used to come and watch them now and then as the work progressed. She had a way of walking round and round the house, looking up at it and poking at plaster and paint with her umbrella or fingertip. One day she brought with her a man with a spade. He spaded up a neat square of ground at the side of the cottage and a long ridge near the fence that separated her yard from that of the very young couple next door. The ridge spelled sweet peas and nasturtium, thank you, to our small town eyes. On the day that Blanche Devine moved in.
She's planting exotic plants.
Uh-oh.
What are they, from the east?
Nimby, nimby, nimby.
These eastern plants?
Some of those east plants? What are they, closer to the sun when it rises? No, thank you.
Too spicy.
I want a good sunset plant. On the day that Blanche Devine moved in, there was wild agitation among the white ruffed, that really got me nervous for a second, white ruffed bedroom curtains of the neighborhood. Later on, certain odors as of burning dinners pervaded the atmosphere. Oh, she's starting a barbecue restaurant. Yeah. Blanche Devine, flushed and excited, her hair slightly askew, her diamond eardrops flashing, directed the moving, wrapped in her great fur coat. But on the third morning, we gasped when she appeared out of doors, carrying a little household ladder, a pail of steaming water, and sundry voluminous white cloths. She reared the little ladder against the side of the house, mounted it cautiously, and began to wash windows with housewifely thoroughness. Her stout figure was swathed in a gray sweater, and on her head was a battered felt hat. The sort of window.
She's not balling. She's cleaning.
Yeah, she's just cleaning.
She's like, look, I clean my windows same as you.
Mm-hmm. And then everyone's like, oh,
cleaning windows just like us.
How dare.
We clean windows the West way.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break from the show to talk to you about one of our sponsors, HelloFresh. This is a lovely meal kit delivery service that we're obsessed with. HelloFresh shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can cook, eat, and enjoy. What are my favorite HelloFresh meals? Well, I personally love the pork carnitas tacos with pickled onion and Monterey Jack cheese. Feeling a little veggie? Well, then say hello to heirloom tomato flatbreads with pesto, fresh mozzarella, and balsamic greens. Guys, I am big into food, big into cooking, and they were so delicious. But at the same time, these recipes are step-by-step and easy enough that anyone can grab these recipes and start cooking. From someone who's like, cooking? What's that? To people who enjoy cooking like me. Here's how it works. There are three plans to choose from. Classic, veggie, family. Forget about planning dinner, spending money on takeout at 10 p.m., or worrying about gathering ingredients week after week. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits, so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. The recipes are simple, the instructions are outlined on pictured step-by-step cards, so it's really hard to screw it up. Spend less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week and get that time back to do more of what you love. Do you love putting together terrariums with different types of amphibians? Do that. Do you love embroidering reproductions of Van Gogh paintings? Do that. Do you love collecting rocks and putting them in tiny jars? Then do that! Most recipes take only 30 minutes, so you can listen to Public Domain Theater while you prepare your meal. And HelloFresh is a subscription service, so your meals come to you week after week just when you need them. All right, let's get you in on that offer, Public Domain Theater listeners. For a total of $60 off, that comes to $20 off your first three boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/public60 and enter promo code
public60.
That's hellofresh.com/public60 and enter promo code
public60
for $60 off HelloFresh. And now back to the show.
Battered felt hat. Thank you. I did it. The sort of window washing costume that has been worn by women from time immemorial. We noticed that she used plenty of hot water and clean rags, and that she rubbed the glass until it sparkled, leaning perilously sideways on the ladder to detect elusive streaks. Our keenest housekeeping eye could find no fault with the way that Blanche Devine washed windows. By May, Blanche Devine had left off her diamond eardrops. Perhaps it was their absence that gave her face a new expression. When she went downtown, we noticed that her hats were more like the hats of the other women in our town wore. but she still affected extravagant footgear, as is right and proper for a stout woman who has cause to be vain of her feet. All right, so is there any word on whether stout women do, in fact, have small feet?
She has not texted me back. She is currently at her mod show.
Okay,
so maybe
fair.
That's why.
Fair.
Or she's very offended that I asked her.
We noticed that her trips downtown were rare that spring and summer. She used to come home laden with little bundles, and before supper she would change her street clothes for a neat, washable house dress. As is our thrifty custom. Midwest.
She has just answered.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And her ruling is, they're just small by comparison.
Oh, very funny. Mm-hmm. That's a good joke. Through her bright windows, we could see her moving briskly about the kitchen to sitting room. And from the smells that floated out from her kitchen door, she seemed to be preparing for her solitary supper the same homely vivens that were frying or stewing or baking in our kitchens.
She eats when we eat.
She's like a person. Sometimes you could detect the delectable scent of browning hot tea biscuit. It takes a determined woman to make tea biscuit for no one but herself. Blanche Devine joined the church. What? She's got religion and all that.
Oh, great.
On the first Sunday morning she came to the service, there was a little flurry among the ushers at the vestibule door. They seated her well in the rear. The second Sunday morning, a dreadful thing happened. The woman next to whom they seated her turned, regarded her stonily for a moment, then rose agitatedly and moved to a pew across the aisle.
This woman is black.
Mm-hmm. Blanche Devine's face went a dull red beneath her white powder.
Okay, maybe not. All right,
maybe not. Okay.
All right.
It's like literally the next line.
Edna saw us coming. She saw us coming.
She's like, it's right about now that they're going to think she's black.
She's like, yes, essentially she is black, but I'm going to fool our white readers by pretending she's white. She never came again, though we saw the minister visit her once or twice. She always accompanied him to the door pleasantly, holding it well open until he was down the little flight of steps and on the sidewalk. The minister's wife did not call. I hate these people. She rose early like the rest of us, and as summer came on, we used to see her moving about in her little garden patch in the dewy golden morning. She wore absurd pale blue negligees that made her stout figure. We can stop talking about her stout figure.
Yeah.
Loom immense against the greenery.
What about her feet?
Are they still small?
Mm-hmm.
Against the greenery of garden and apple tree. The neighborhood women viewed these negligees with Puritan disapproval as they smoothed down.
Wait, so she's wearing her negligees like out and about.
In my garden, in my slip.
Yeah.
What year is this?
This is like, it's got to be at least... She died when? In like 20...
In the 60s?
This is sounding like some 30s.
Because that's like,
stuff. You
couldn't even do that in the movies back
no,
then.
No, yeah.
Like the Hays Code. Like that's like...
Maybe this is pre-Hays Code.
She's out here tripping hard. Like she's out here being like, I'm going to fuck up the status quo.
Yeah.
This is the Amber Rose of her time.
Yeah. I think that's what she had in mind. Against the greenery of garden and apple tree. The neighborhood women viewed these negligees with Puritan disapproval as they smoothed down their own prim, starched gingham skirts. They said it was disgusting, and perhaps it was, but the habit of years is not easily overcome. Blanche Devine, snipping her sweet peas, peering anxiously at the Virginia creeper that clung with such fragile fingers to the trellis, watering the flower baskets that hung from her porch, was blissfully unconscious of the disapproving eyes.
I love that she's like, I don't know her to them.
Yeah.
Like they're just like, ugh. And she's just like paying attention to her like sweet peas.
Yeah.
I think she truly doesn't get it though, because now it gets a little sad.
Oh no.
I wish one of us had just stopped to call good morning to her over the fence and to say in our neighborly small town way, my, ain't this a scorcher. So early too. It'll be fierce by noon. But we did not. Oh, I feel like she dies at the end of this or something. Ugh. I think perhaps the evenings must have been the loneliest for her. The summer evenings in our little town are filled with intimate, human, neighborly sounds. After the heat of the day, it is pleasant to relax in the cool comfort of the front porch. Squeak as I move my mic. With the life of the town eddying about us. We sew and read out there until it grows dusk. We call across lots to our next door neighbor. The men water the lawns and the flower boxes and get together in little quiet groups to discuss the new street paving. I've even known Mrs. Hines to bring her cherries out there when she had canning to do and pit them there on the front porch, partially shielded by her porch vine, but not so effectually that she was deprived of the sights and sounds about her. The kettle in her lap, excuse me, I had to swallow, and the dishpan full of great ripe cherries on the porch floor by her chair. She would pit and chat and peer out through the vines, the red juice staining her plump, bare arms. I have wondered since what Blanche Devine thought of us those lonesome evenings, those evenings filled with friendly sights and sounds. It must have been difficult for her who had dwelt behind closed shutters so long to seat herself on the new front porch for all the world to stare at. But she did sit there, resolutely, watching us in silence. She seized hungrily upon the stray crumbs of conversation that fell to her. The milkman and the iceman and the butcher boy used to hold daily conversation with her. They, sociable gentlemen, would stand on her doorstep, one grimy hand resting against the white of her doorpost, exchanging the time of day with Blanche in the doorway. A tea towel in one hand, perhaps, and a plate in the other. Her little house was a miracle of cleanliness. It was no uncommon sight to see her down on her knees on the kitchen floor, wielding her brush and rag like the rest of us. They're so surprised that she cleans.
Yeah.
Also, they're really into cleaning.
So into cleaning.
Like, I guess, like, you know, you don't have anything else to do. You don't have Twitter. So you have to, like, clean.
But I don't buy it because they died of disease, like, all the time.
I know. Well,
but
that's because they were cleaning with, like, dirty fucking water. They were cleaning with, like, cholera water.
Yeah, so it's like, maybe don't clean. You know what I'm saying?
Like, stop doing that.
Maybe be better off dirty.
Clean your water.
Yeah.
Clean your water.
Start scrubbing water.
Brita filters.
Yeah. Hear of it? It was no uncommon sight to say, oh, I got that. In canning and preserving time, there floated out from her kitchen the pungent scent of pickled crab apples, the mouth-watering smell that meant sweet pickles, or the cloying, divinely sticky odor that meant raspberry jam.
Yum.
Snooky, from her side of the fence, often used to peer through the pickets, gazing in the direction of the enticing smells next door, still unclear on whether it's a dog or a girl.
Yes.
Early one September morning, there floated out from Blanche Devine's kitchen that fragrant, sweet, I'm having a little more trouble today. I don't know why. Mm. Sweet scent of fresh baked cookies, cookies with butter in them and spice and with nuts on top. Boo, I'm allergic. Mm. Just by the smell of them, your mind's eye pictured them coming from the oven, crisp brown circlets. Crumbly.
Crisp brown circlets.
Mm-hmm. Circlets.
Circlets. I heard crisp brown.
Chris Brown. They were Chris Brown cookies.
They were abusive cookies. Especially to me, because I'm allergic to nuts.
Oh. Way to make.
That's a girlfriend beating joke.
Yeah, way to make a public girlfriend beating about you.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
I don't disagree.
Thank you. Sorry. Everything is about me.
You're fine.
I'm so sorry.
No, I shouldn't have this long of legs.
Oh.
Oh.
I constantly am like kicking people under tables.
That's
lately.
True. She's kicked me a number of times.
Kicked you. Sometimes when we're recording Thank You for Questing, we're like in Omar and Mia's house, and so we're often barefoot, and I always accidentally touch Chris Bramante's barefoot with my barefoot, and we're always like, oh, God.
That doesn't feel good at all.
No. That's not comfortable.
That's
no.
Why I don't. Be chilling barefoot, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know why people do that.
It's an Asian house.
That's why never be around
Asians. Our shoes off.
I understand the cultural thing, but that feeling that you just described is something I never want
to
feel.
It's very repulsive.
And I'd rather be rude culturally than ever feel that.
Here's the thing. You can avoid it, which a thing I prefer to do, because I don't enjoy having bare feet around, is you wear a slipper or you wear like a sock. And then it's like not skin touching skin. That's very undesirable.
That's fair. That's fair. Mm-hmm. I like that hack. I will continue to keep you
can
socks.
You can keep. Yeah. Keep your socks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
Maybe,
you.
Maybe because I ask for shoes to come off in my home because I spent money on a rug for the first time in my life.
Of course.
And I would like to preserve the rug.
Sure.
But my boyfriend records his podcast there. And so I'm like sometimes forcing like relatively well-known comedians to take their shoes off in my home. I feel a little weird about that, but I'm like, fuck you. Your status shouldn't mean that I don't make you take your shoes off too.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So I
just
do.
Channel my mother.
But maybe I could provide slippers to everybody.
Yeah. Provide some booties.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
little hospital booties.
Little slip-on ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Crisp brown circlets, crumbly, brown. Delectable. Snooki in her scarlet sweater and cap still could be a dog. Sniffed them from afar.
Or the Jersey Shore lady.
Still could be a dog. And straightaway deserted her sand pile to take her stand at the fence.
It still could be a dog.
She peered through the restraining bars, standing on tiptoe. Blanche Devine glancing up.
That's got to be a person.
I don't know. My dog stands.
On tiptoe?
Well, not on tiptoe. But he settles back.
Okay.
On his haunches. It's real cute.
Okay. It is cute. But I think this is probably a person. I believe you believe it's a dog.
All right. So it gets less like a dog in a second.
She says, I'm not a dog.
On tiptoe. Snooki's like,
Lindsay.
Hey, I'm not a dog. I'd like some cookies. Blanche Devine, glancing up from her board and rolling pin, saw the eager golden head. Still could be a dog at this point.
Golden retriever. So.
And Snooki, with guile in her heart, raised one fat, dimpled hand, less like a dog, above the fence and waved it friendlily.
It's not a dog.
We'll see. Blanche Devine waved back, thus encouraged Snooki's two hands wigwagged wag frantically above the pickets. Blanche Devine hesitated a moment, her flowery hand on her hip. Then she went to the pantry shelf and took out a clean white saucer. She selected
saucer of milk.
Saucer for a dog.
Is she a cat?
Snooki could be literally anything.
Literally anything. Is she an apple?
Snooki could be an apple.
Is she a shoe?
Is Snooki us? We are Snooki.
We're all Snooki.
She selected from the brown jar on the table three of the brownest, crumbliest, most perfect cookies with a walnut meat. No, thank you.
Yummy.
Perched atop of each. I'm most walnut allergic meat. To walnuts. I think that just means nut.
I know the that there's the of meat of the nut and flesh of the nut also.
Yeah. Unnecessary. Just call it a nut.
So you can just say the nut because you don't eat the outside part.
I don't like this description of of these nuts. I also do not enjoy nuts a lot. I'll eat cashews every now and then. But if anyone was just like, these cashews are very meaty, I would say, thank you, sir, for ruining cashews for me. I'll never be eating them ever again.
Hi, would you like a flesh cashew?
They're so fleshy. They're so juicy.
Yuck. Disgusting.
Walnut meat perched atop of each, placed them temptingly on the saucer, and descending the steps, came swiftly across the grass to the triumphant Snooki. Blanche Devine held out the saucer, her lips smiling, her eyes tender. Snooki reached up with one plump white arm. Definitely a dog, right? Snooki, shrilled a high voice. Snooki, a voice of horror and wrath. Come here to me this minute, and don't you dare touch those. Snooki hesitated rebelliously, one pink finger in her pouting mouth. Dog.
Then she stuffed the cookies in her mouth and gave her mom the double bird. Snooki, do you hear me?
Is
so fucking cunty, dude.
God, Edgar's turn. Will we find out, dog or person?
And the very young wife began to descend the steps of her back porch. Snooki, regretful eyes on the toothsome dainties, turned away aggrieved. The very young wife, her lips set, her eyes flashing, advanced and seized the shrieking Snooki by one arm and dragged her away toward home and safety.
Safety.
Blanche Devine stood there at the fence, holding the saucer in hand. The saucer tipped slowly, and the three cookies slipped off and fell to the grass.
No. Oh, she's so sad.
Yeah, she's very depressed.
This is really sad.
Blanche Devine stood staring at them a moment. Then she turned quickly and went into the house and shut the door. It was about this time we noticed that Blanche Devine was away much of the time. The little white cottage would be empty for weeks. We knew she was out of town because the expressman would come for her trunk. We used to lift our eyebrows significantly. The newspapers and handbills would accumulate in a dusty little heap on the porch. But when she returned, there was a grand cleaning, with the windows open, and Blanche, her head bound turban-wise in a towel, appeared at a window every few minutes to shake out a dust cloth. She seemed to put an enormous amount of energy into those cleanings, as if they were sort of a safety valve. As winter came on, she used to sit up before her great fire long after we were asleep in our beds. And when she neglected to pull down the shades, we could see the flames of her cozy fire dancing gnome-like on the wall. There came a night of sleet and snow and wind.
Your
and
fire is dancing like a little gnome.
Yeah, I never heard that description.
I would be like, ah!
That's a terrifying shape to see in fire.
Oh, no wonder they're scared of Blanche. Yeah.
She's got fire gnome.
Yeah,
she's a witch. One of those blustering wild nights that are followed by morning paper reports of trains stalled in drifts, mail delayed, telephone and telegraph wires down. It must have been midnight or past when there came a hammering at Blanche Devine's door, a persistent, clamorous rapping. Blanche Devine, sitting before her dying fire half asleep, started and cringed when she heard it, then jumped to her feet, her hand at her breast, her eyes darting this way and that as though seeking escape. She had heard a rapping like that before. It had meant blue coats swarming up the stairway.
She is a madam, and her place got raided. Mm-hmm. Sad.
Yep. It reminds me of the show Harlots.
Oh. I've been wanting to watch that show. Is it good? It's fine.
My girlfriend watches it, and I watch to be supportive.
That show's always trying to come on after I watch Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, that's what I don't like about it. It's like they always force it to you when you're watching something else around like women. It's just like, I didn't want to watch this. You're pushing on this.
Stop
on me.
This acting is my limit. Like all women are like.
This is my limit.
I can only watch so many women.
That's right.
All at once in a show.
Like, I'll watch Girls and then I'll watch Insecure. I don't watch them both together. That's insulting.
Give it a gap.
She had heard a rapping like that before. It had meant blue coats swarming up the stairway and frightened cries and pleadings and wild confusion. So she started forward, now quivering. And then she remembered being wholly awake now, she remembered, and threw up her head and smiled a little bitterly and walked toward the door. The hammering continued, louder than ever. Blanche Devine flicked on the porch light and opened the door. The half-clad figure of the very young wife next door staggered into the room. She seized Blanche Devine's arm with both her frenzied hands and shook her.
What?
The wind and snow beating in upon both of them. The baby, she screamed in high hysterical voice. The baby! The baby!
What?
Blanche Devine shut the door and shook the young wife smartly by the shoulders. Stop screaming, she said quickly. Is she sick? The young wife told her, her teeth shattering. Come quick, she's dying. Will's out of town. I tried to get the doctor. The telephone wouldn't. I saw your light, for God's sake. Blanche Devine grasped the young wife's arm, opened the door, and together they sped across the little space that separated the two houses.
Oh, she's about to redeem herself because she's going to save a baby.
I wonder if they're even going to, like, acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to be like, thank you so much. Goodbye again.
Yeah, go back to being a hated metaphor for black woman. Blanche Devine was a big woman, but she took the stairs like a girl and found...
with her tiny, tiny feet.
What? But she took the stairs like a... That's a wild sentence.
This guy in the neighborhood, A, watches Blanche constantly.
He's constantly. He's clocking what she's doing
his
all the
time.
His
eyes are never anywhere else.
No. And he's like, we watched her this. No. You watched her.
And it's also like, if there was a baby dying and you sat back and watched detailed it and like...
He's like, by the way, there's a whole different story where I detail how Snooki got sick.
Yeah. No, you know what? It's a Rear Window situation. He broke his leg.
He broke his leg. This is like years.
He's watching.
I know it's Minnie's fault that he broke his leg.
Minnie! Oh,
on top of watching this woman all the time, he's obsessed with how fast she moves as a bigger lady.
He
constantly is taking notes.
He's like, how are those feet so small? How does she move on those small
feet? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so quickly.
And found the right bedroom by some miraculous woman instinct.
What?
Nah, it's probably just like, you know, it's three people who live there. If it's not the master bedroom, it's probably, you know.
Also, baby, probably crying. It's sick.
A dreadful, choking, rattling sound
was
coming from Snooki's
bed. She heard a baby, like women do.
A dreadful, choking, rattling sound was coming from Snooki's bed.
Oh, shit.
I don't know how to say this word, but crop said.
Oh, croup.
Croup, said Blanche Devine and began her fight.
It was a good fight.
She marshaled her inadequate forces made up of the half-fainting young wife and the terrified and awkward hired girl. Get the hot water on. Lots of it, Blanche Devine pinned up her sleeves. Hot cloths, tear up a sheet or anything. Got an oil stove? I want a tea kettle boiling in the room. She's got to have the steam. If that don't do it, we'll raise an umbrella over her and throw a sheet over and hold the kettle until the steam gets to her that way. Got any ipecac?
Ipecac, yeah.
The young wife obeyed orders.
Make that baby throw up.
Mm-hmm.
in a sauna.
True, they're making a makeshift sauna. The young wife obeyed orders, white-faced and shaking. Once Blanche Devine glanced up at her sharply. "Don't you dare faint," she commanded.
Nice.
And then she slapped her.
Yeah, yes, yeah, I wanted to slap her.
Like a reverse Gone with the Wind. Yeah. She's like, yeah, my time to slap.
Mm-hmm. It's my time to slap.
Which is weird that she slapped her because she was like, "Don't faint. Now here's a very hard hit." And the fight went on. Gradually, the breathing that had been so frightful became softer, easier. Blanche Devine did not relax. It was not until the little figure breathed gently in sleep that Blanche Devine sat back, satisfied. Then she tucked a cover at the side of the bed, took a last satisfied look at the face on the pillow, and turned to look at the wan, disheveled young wife. "She's all right now. We can get the doctor when morning comes, though I don't know if you'll need him." The young wife came round to Blanche Devine's side of the bed and stood looking up at her.
"Now get out of my house."
Yeah.
"My baby died," said Blanche Devine simply. The young wife gave a little inarticulate cry, put her two hands on Blanche Devine's broad shoulders, and laid her tired head on her breast. "I guess I'd better be going," said Blanche Devine. The young wife raised her hand, her eyes round with fright. "Going? Oh, please stay. I'm so afraid. Suppose she takes sick again. Take awful breathing. I'll stay if you want me to. Oh, please, I'll make up your bed and you can rest. I'm not sleepy. I'm not much of a hand to sleep anyway. I'll sit up here in the hall where there's a light. You get to bed. I'll watch and see that everything's all right. Have you got something I can read out here? Something kind of lively with a love story in it?"
She's like, "Get me a romance novel. 50 Shades of Grey.
I'm trying to stay awake. Can you have a romance novel?
You got any
To stay awake, hot? I need to be turned on."
So the night went by. Snooky slept in her bed. The very young white wife half dozed in her bed so near the little one. In the hall, her stout figure looming grotesque in wall shadows, sat Blanche Devine, pretending to read. Now and then she rose and tiptoed into the bedroom with miraculous quiet and stooped over the little bed and listened and locked and tiptoed away again, satisfied. The young husband came home from his business trip next day with the tales of snowdrifts and stalled engines. Blanche Devine breathed a sigh of relief when she saw him from her kitchen window. She watched the house now with a sort of proprietary eye. She wondered about Snooky, but she knew better to ask, so she waited. The young wife next door had told her husband all about that awful night, had told him with tears and sobs. The young husband had been very, very angry with her. Angry,
why?
He said. And astonished. Snooky could not have been so sick. Look at her now, as well as ever. And to have such
a... You're a liar. And then everyone kept ignoring Blanche.
This is fucking crazy.
He's gaslighting
her. He's gaslighting her like crazy. He's like, "You sound crazy right now."
Yeah.
If babies aren't sick anymore, they never were.
Yeah.
Never.
She was sick? Come on, why are you lying? And to have called such a woman, well, he did not want to be harsh, but she must understand that she must never speak to that woman again. Never.
No.
So, this is so sad.
So the next day, the very young wife happened to go by with the young husband. Blanche Devine spied them from her sitting room window, and she made the excuse of looking in her mailbox in order to go to the door. She stood in the doorway, and the very young wife went on by the arm of her husband. She went by rather white-faced, without a look or a word or a sign.
No!
And then this happened.
Oh.
There came into Blanche Devine's face a look that made slits of her eyes and drew her mouth down into an ugly, narrow line.
Fair.
And that made the muscles of her jaw tense and hard. It was the ugliest look you can imagine. Then she smiled, if having one's lips curl away from one's teeth can be called smiling.
Kidnap that baby.
2 days later, there were
Make
great
Make it your
new-
own.
Yes. Take True, the baby really, away. Yeah. Take, Snooky.
You deserve
that,
it.
Take that dog.
You've earned it.
Adopt that dog.
2 days later, there was great news of the white cottage on the corner. The curtains were down. The furniture was packed. The rugs were rolled. The wagons came and backed up to the house and took things that made a home for Blanche Devine.
Mm.
And when we heard that she had bought back her interest in the house with the closed shutters near the Fright Depot, we sniffed. "I knew
Fuck
she wouldn't
y'all.
Last, we said. They never do, said we.
Man.
Wow.
That was sad. Wow.
Wow.
Edna.
Yeah, she's definitely black.
Yeah, for sure.
I believe so.
For sure. I believe that.
Yeah.
Or it's like a class thing, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely it's certainly bigger than just like that story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man.
That's a good story.
That was a good story.
Thank you so much to the listener who suggested that. You are so much better than Brett.
Yeah. Wow. I want to check out like the movies that were adaptations of her
I want to read everything. Yeah, Edna.
That was a really good story. That was so sad.
Yeah.
Fuck that town.
I know.
She's a very visual writer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see the people and stuff like that.
I could see every... It was like a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like when you were reading, I wasn't even interrupting that much because I was just, like, listening and, mm-hmm. like being, like, just seeing it in my mind like a movie.
Yeah, that last scene of her mm-hmm. watching the wife go by and not saying anything and being like, you fucking coward. Like,
yeah.
I saved your daughter's life. And not only that, but, like, it seems that Blanche was a very reserved woman and opened up to her and told her, like, my child. Like, that must have been such a vulnerable moment for her to be so betrayed.
Yeah.
And that shit got me fucked up.
I know. I feel, like, really sad right now.
Yeah. Sad.
Ugh. God. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on and doing the show and reading this. Really, we flip-flopped so much on what we thought of her.
Yeah.
On this really good story. So thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Do you have anything you would like to plug?
Absolutely. I'd like to plug my web series, Sad Boy Edgar. It's like just a bunch of vignettes of me being very sad.
It sounds fun.
It's funny. I promise you it's funny. You can check it out on my website, www.edgarmonpazier.com. Check out Culture Kings. We're over on the How Stuff Works Network. You can listen to us wherever you get podcasts.
Awesome.
Just hit me up at UCB or something like that.
Nice.
Great.
Thank you so much to the listener who suggested this. As we said before, if you want to suggest a story, you can go to our pinned tweet at Public Domain Pod. That's us on all social media. And you can suggest a book or a story there. If you want to help our show, hop on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a friendly review and write a review. That's the thing that best helps a new podcast. Business.
Dun dun dun. Thank you again to Edgar.
Yes, thanks, Edgar.
We'll see you next week. Keep it lit.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter.